that they are not easy to persuade. However, research would show otherwise. A man by the name of Dr. Robert B. Cellini wrote a book called Influence, the Psychology of Persuasion, and he wrote about six factors that help us make our decisions and even sometimes work against us. The first factor is called the law of reciprocity. Basically, this law says, if I scratch your back, you feel emotionally obligated to scratch my back. Studies have been done on waiters and waitresses. For example, I'm sure most of us have gone to Olive Garden at one point or the other. And after a waiter or waitress leaves you a mint, or after they leave you the bill, they give you a mint. Well, research has shown that this mint can increase tips by 4%. However, if they leave you two mints, it can increase your tips by 14%. Whether we realize it or not, we like to do nice things for people who've done nice things for us, even on a subconscious level. Another factor that can be used to help us make a decision, even be used against us, is the law of commitment. We want to stay committed to things that we have said out loud. I don't know if you've ever been to a timeshare meeting, but one thing that they might do at the begin with is ask if you like to vacation. And at the end, when they're trying to get you to sign the dotted line and you protest, they'll say something to the effect of, well, you said you liked to vacation. Wouldn't this make things more convenient for you? And they guilt you into saying yes. Another thing is social proof. And I think this is something we have all noticed in our own lives. We naturally want to do what everyone else is doing. In fact, that's why we tell our kids at a young age, just because everyone else is doing it doesn't mean you should do it too. The other is authority. For example, many companies use doctors in their ads campaigns because we trust doctors. We see doctors as a person of authority, someone to trust. Some companies have even used actors who play doctors on TV to sell their product because even on a subconscious level, we trust fake doctors. Another thing that can help us make our decisions is how much we like or respect someone. If someone we respect or someone we like ask us to do something, it's harder for us to say no. And the final thing is scarcity. If we feel something is in short supply, we will seek it out. But these factors, believe it or not, can affect our faith. And they can even be used against us. And I think some of the best examples of resisting these very factors are Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. If you will turn with me to the book of Daniel. The first part of our lesson, we're going to be jumping around a bit just to kind of set the context up. Let's start with Daniel chapter 1 and begin with me in verses 3 through 4. Daniel chapter 1, verses 3 through 4. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, the chief of his officials, to bring in some of the sons of Israel, including some of the royal family and the nobles. Youths in whom there was no defect, who were good-looking, showing intelligence in every branch of wisdom and a discerning knowledge, and who had the ability for serving in the king's court. And he ordered them to teach them the literature and language of the Chaldeans. Now you keep reading in the passage, we know four men were selected from Israel. Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And they would have successful careers. We know from verse 17 that God was with them in their studies. He blessed them. He gave them strength and wisdom. And they became more proficient than any of the conjurers and magicians of all the land. God also blessed them in their progress. We see from Daniel 2:49 that eventually Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego became administrators of the province of Babylon. And we know from Daniel 2 that they had arrived in Babylon roughly sometime before the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar. And chapter 3 is thought to have been at least 10 years after their arrival. So they have been in Babylon a long time. They have built up careers. They have likely built up a lot of credibility with the king. But all that they have built up is about to be put to the test. Turn with me to Daniel chapter 3, starting at verse 1. Nebuchadnezzar the king had made an image of gold. the height of which was 60 cubits, and its width was 6 cubits. He set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Sometimes the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, he created a huge idol. The text says 60 cubits high, so that would be roughly 90 feet tall, roughly 9 stories high, and 9 feet wide. It was huge, and it said that it was made out of gold, likely meaning that it was overlaid in gold the same way the Ark of the Covenant was wood, yet it was overlaid in gold. However, it would not be impossible if it was made of solid gold. So why would the king create such an image, such a fantastic idol? And we see in the next few verses that he invites many of his administrators and satraps to come and to worship this great idol. Now remember, the empire of Babylon was built up of many nations, many different cultures, many different languages and religions. The Babylonian Empire was divided socially. And what better way to bring people together than for them to share one religion, at least along with their other religions? And what better place than to start with the people who are in charge? And if they need a little encouragement, if they don't, they will be burned alive. So he has a high chance to at least bring the kingdom together in this manner. But there have been other suggestions as to why King Nebuchadnezzar built this statue or this idol. Remember what happened in chapter 2. Nebuchadnezzar had had a dream about his empire and the fall of his empire. We don't often think of the fall of our own country. When was the last time you thought about the fall of the United States? It's not something I think about every day, and I'm sure it's not something you think about every day. Lord willing, God will protect our nation and will last forever. But statistically speaking, all nations fall at some point. Even nations like China, which haven't been nations for forever, they're a culture that has changed governments multiple times. We might always have the United States, but the government might change from time to time over the next 1,000 years. Who knows? But the king Nebuchadnezzar knew that his nation was going to fall. And perhaps he was worried it was going to fall soon. So what better way than to stabilize his empire than to have a united religion? Maybe this would allow his empire to last longer than it was originally intended. Continue reading with me verses 4 through 6. Then the herald loudly proclaimed, "To you the command is given, O peoples, nations, and men of every language, that at the moment you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, lyre, trigon, psaltery, bagpipe, and all kinds of music, you are to fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king has set up. But whoever does not fall down and worship shall immediately be cast into the midst of the furnace of blazing fire." Read with me verses 8 through 12. "For this reason, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and brought charges against the Jews. They responded and said to Nebuchadnezzar the king, 'O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the horn, flute, lyre, trigon, psaltery, and bagpipe, and all kinds of music is to fall down and worship the golden image. But whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into the midst of the furnace of blazing fire. There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the administration of the province of Babylon, namely Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have disregarded you, and they do not serve your gods or worship the golden image which you have set up." Now, I want us to consider one thing. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego stood with these administrators, fellow administrators, their colleagues, their friends, their co-workers in the plain of Dura. And it may have been a big event. There may have been plenty of tents to stay in the shade. There may have been instruments for entertainment. There may have been poets and dancers. It may have been a big party. And then a herald comes out and he informs everyone that as soon as these instruments begin to play, everyone is to worship the idol. And if you don't, we're going to throw you into the furnace. And as soon as the instruments begin to play, everyone falls down and worships the idol. All except for three men. Now, can we imagine how difficult that would have been? We already talked about social proof and how being in a crowd or being around other people, we naturally want to do what everyone else is doing. In fact, to illustrate this, a man by the name of Solomon Ash did a very interesting experiment to illustrate how difficult it is to resist social pressure. And if this is something you want to check out, go to YouTube tonight and type in Solomon Ash experiment. It's pretty interesting, and it's kind of scary. What he did is he found volunteers to participate in an experiment. And these volunteers would arrive in a room with five other people. And they thought these other people were part of the experiment with them. What they did not realize is that these five men were Confederates. They were assisting with the experiment. And what would happen is a man would stand at the front of the room with a chart, with one line on one side and three lines on the other, labeled A, B, and C. And all everyone had to do was label which line matched up with the first one. Anyone with basic vision can answer which line matches which line. It's very simple. And that's what happened at first. He would flip the chart, and everyone would give out the correct answer. The first one would say A, the next one would say A, and the third one would say A, and it would eventually get to the volunteer, and he would see that the lines match up, and he said A. But by the time they got to the third question, the Confederates were told to give the wrong answer on purpose. The volunteer, having basic vision, can see that they're all wrong, but he's embarrassed. He doesn't want to give the right answer because everyone else gave the wrong answer. So every time the crowd would give a wrong answer, he himself would give a wrong answer. And they were asked afterward, why didn't they give the right answer, even though they knew it was the right thing to say? They said they were embarrassed. They didn't want to rock the boat. They didn't want to upset anyone. You instill in your kids at a very young age that just because everyone else is doing something, you shouldn't do it either. My mom always used to tell me, if all your friends jumped off a bridge, would you jump off a bridge too? Which is really a poor example because the closest bridge to our house was 10 feet above the river. So it really wasn't, a threat to me, but I understood what she was trying to say. And we as adults, we understand how we want to conform to everyone around us. Maybe you have been to a political event or some social event where the speaker is talking about a bill or a specific belief that kind of gets the crowd excited and everyone starts to clap. But it's not something that aligns with your Christian values. And you sit there in silence and everyone else is clapping except for you. It's not a comfortable feeling because everyone around you sees and maybe glances at you and because you're not clapping. I had experienced the same thing the other day. I was at an event and a man was professing a religious view that I did not agree with and everyone else was clapping. And people would glance at me because I wasn't clapping and it felt uncomfortable. It felt weird. I wanted to clap just because everyone else was clapping. So let's imagine Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego when everyone else is bowing to the ground. They're the only three that's standing. And maybe they're not together. Maybe they're in different parts of the area. Maybe they feel they're standing by themselves. And yet, regardless of the social pressure, they decide to do what is right. However, this act of disobedience seems to have gone largely unnoticed. Initially, no one calls them out at first. Maybe they hide it well. Maybe some people are too scared to speak up. Obviously, the king is unaware of it, but some individuals decide to point it out. Now, maybe they were sticklers for doing what is right, but more likely than that, they wanted their jobs. We all know how politics go. There are several ways in which you can advance your career. You can work hard, you can be determined, You can do what your supporters want, or you can destroy your fellow, your opponent with slander, and if you're lucky, you can get them killed, which seems to have been a popular tactic in this day, because we see this very tactic twice in the book of Daniel. Even Daniel's fellow satraps want to kill him by tossing him in the lion's den. But they come to the king with the usual pleasantries, "O king, live forever," and they explain how three of the men that he has selected has disobeyed him. They have shown no respect for his authority, so they say, that they have turned against him, that they have betrayed him. So Nebuchadnezzar calls Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego before him. Read with me verses 13 through 15. "Then Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and anger, gave orders to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then these men were brought before the king. Nebuchadnezzar responded and said to them, 'Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my God or worship my golden image that I have set up? Now if you are ready at the moment you hear the sound of the horn, flute, lyre, trigon, psaltery, and bagpipe, and all kinds of music to fall down and worship the image that I have made, very well. But if you do not worship, you will immediately be cast into the midst of a furnace of blazing fire. And what God is there who can deliver you out of my hand?'" Well, we see Nebuchadnezzar is at least a little merciful. He gives them a second chance. He brings them before them. These are likely administrators that he has grown to respect and love. They have built up some credibility with him. He doesn't want to get rid of them initially. But on the other hand, he has to save face. He can't have people in his kingdom just randomly disobeying orders. It wouldn't look good on him. But they refuse. Can we imagine how hard that would be? During the Nuremberg trials, when the Nazi officers were asked why they did their crimes against humanity, they all answered and said, "We did what we were told to do." Now, the Allied powers, they didn't like that answer. They thought that any decent, moral human being would ignore orders to do terrible things to other people. They thought only corrupt, evil people could be pressured from their authorities to commit such atrocities. Well, a man by the name of Stanley Milgram decided to test and see if he could get decent, everyday American people to hurt other people. He performed an experiment, though no one was technically hurt. I think it's unethical. However, we do learn a lot about human nature from what he did. He himself, like Solomon Asch, found volunteers. He paid them $4 for their hour of work. It was in the 60s, so it was a good chunk of change. And he would ask these volunteers to come into a room. He told them that they were to assist in the experiment, that they were not being experimented on, but they were helping with an experiment. They were supposed to be the teacher. And they were in a room, at a chair, with a table, with a box, and they would look through a window with another man on the other side. And the other man on the other side was called the learner. And he had electrodes hooked up to him. And he was told that he was supposed to ask this man questions. And every time he missed one, he was to push a button and it would shock the man on the other side. And then every time he would miss another question, he would up the voltage and shock him again. Now, the volunteer did not realize that man was a paid actor. He wasn't actually being hurt, but he thought he was hurting someone else. And the findings were shocking because 100% of volunteers were willing to give up to 300 volts of electricity to the person they were teaching. And up to 60% were willing to give lethal volts of electricity. Now you may wonder, why would some random person off the street be willing to do such terrible things to other people? Well, if you have any time tonight, look up the video. Type in Stanley Milgram's experiment. It's very interesting. Because you see in that video, there's a man in the room with the teacher. A man in a lab coat who carries an air of authority. And we see that the volunteer protests. He says, I really think we should help that guy. I really think we should let him go. I think we're hurting him too much. But the man in the lab coat says, you must continue the experiment. You have no other choice but to continue the experiment. The guy says, well, who's going to take responsibility? I will just keep going with the experiment. And 60% of those men were willing to give lethal volts of electricity to this random person because they were told to. Now let's think about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They have the most powerful man in the world asking them to worship this idol. I know social pressure has a lot of pull. They were able to overcome that, but authoritative pressure, that's something that seems to be even more intense. And he commands them to bow down and worship this idol. Notice their response. Read with me verses 16 through 18. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to give you an answer concerning this matter. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the furnace of blazing fire, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But even if he does not, let it be known to you, O king, that we are not going to serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. Nebuchadnezzar thought he held the power of life and death in his hands. He was wrong. And these three men knew he was wrong. They said, we don't need to give you an answer. We're content with where we are. If you want to try and kill us, that's fine. Our God is more powerful than you, and if he chooses to, he can save us. But notice what they say in verse 18. They said, even if he does not save us, we will not bow down and worship this image. There's a man by the name of Joseph Fletcher who created a system of ethics. That's something interesting that's worth looking into. He does not believe that there are any absolute moral laws. He says everything is relative. He says the outcome is more important than the action. For example, he has people would ask him, what about things like adultery and murder? And he would say, well, if the outcome would benefit more people, if it would create a better environment for everyone else, in certain situations, it could be justified. And believe it or not, and you can figure this out just by having conversations with people, most people agree to this to some degree. More people are concerned with the outcome than they are the actual action. That's why people are willing to, you know, white lie or fib a little or fudge the facts or cut corners because they're more concerned with the outcome versus what they actually do. Jesus Christ was not concerned with the outcome. He knew obedience to God would cost him his life. He was not concerned with the consequences. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego knew that their decision might very well cost their lives. They were not concerned with the consequences. And we as New Testament Christians, our actions should be based off what is pleasing to God, regardless of what that might cost us. And in light of their decision, God was with them. Turn with me to verse 22. For this reason, because the king's command was urgent and the furnace had been extremely hot, the flame of the fire slew those men who had carried up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell into the midst of the fire, a blazing fire, still tied up. Basically, the fire was so hot that the men who were supposed to toss Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego into the fire, it was so hot that they died instantly. But Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were safe. Continue reading with me in verse 24. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astounded and stood up in haste. And he said to his high officials, Was it not three men we cast and bound into the midst of the fire? And they replied to the king, certainly, O king. And he said, look, I see four men loosed and walking about in the midst of the fire without harm. And the appearance of the fourth is like a son of the gods. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the door of the furnace of blazing fire, and he responded and said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, come out, you servants of the Most High God, and come here. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the midst of the fire. Because of their obedience, because of their love for God, God was with them. He came in some manifestation, or he sent an angel to be with them. It is unclear. But God was with them. And we as Christians can expect that if we serve God and if we love God, regardless of the consequences, God will be with us too and help us along the way. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were not deterred by social pressure, by pressure from authorities, nor the consequences. And we as Christians should be just as strong and just as determined. Before we end tonight, we would like to extend the invitation. If there is anyone here tonight who has not yet become obedient to the gospel, we would love to baptize you and Christ will add you to his church. If there's anyone here tonight who is perhaps walking in a manner not pleasing to God, and needs prayers of restoration, we would be glad to pray for you and help you in any way that we can. If there are any spiritual needs that we can help you with, we want to help you. We love you and we care for you. If there's anything at all, please come forward as we stand and sing.